The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and joining me for the first time since August 2017 is guest Charlie Andy Peters. It is so nice to see your face, my friend. It has been a long time since we've sat down and done one of these FOFOP episodes. Welcome back.
I feel like so much, like I can't even wrap my head around what's happened in the world. I looked at it today, 2017, like let's see what... First of all, I just want to read out loud the message you sent me a couple minutes ago and just kind of like discuss. I just want to start here. I'm running 15 minutes late, man, dealing with an injured snake that was in my pool. What? Okay, let's start with the snake itself. This seems to be such an arbitrary problem that you just sent it as like, oh, another day, another snake in my pool.
Okay, so between when we last spoke and now, we've both been through a lot of changes because 2017 was, as we all know, about 30 years ago. And so a lot has happened in the time in between. One of the things that's happened is I've moved to the country. I've moved to a little property in the country, and it means that my life is dealing with a few more things that I wouldn't ordinarily deal with in the city, including the fact that occasionally when you come down to clean the pool in the morning, there's going to be a snake in there. Yeah. And so this morning, there was an injured snake in, not in the actual pool itself, but in this sort of overflow area next to the pool, and it looked pretty injured and had quite a big gash out of it, like it had been, you know, attacked by another animal or something like that. So it was about like a meter and a half or 2 meters long. It was like a python.
And, okay, so this is a real deal snake.
Wow. I mean, in Australia, it's like, I mean, it's not that real a deal. You know, like, I mean, you have to be pretty little to be scared of the python. You know,
like this was, you know, by California terms, one time I was on a hike and turned the corner and heard the rattle of what might have been a snake. Like, I didn't even investigate. I didn't get a visual cue of the snake. I just heard what might have been a snake and just canceled the whole hike. Just went, like, got in my car, hike off.
It was just a baby with a rattle going around the corner. That's what it was.
You go around the corner and it's just like a cartoonish baby holding a rattle. But I saw a sign like minutes before that was like, not even like beware of snake, but it was like one of those hiking signs that were like, you're going to see a snake, and like a picture of the snake that you're going to see. Like this is the sound. This is the snake you're going to see. Not that you might, but it's a rattle and you're going to see one. And so I'm like really listening for it, heard what might have been one, canceled. But you see a snake in your pool. And then you texted me that you had to like tend to it. So when you see an injured snake, what's step B? Step A, get snake out of pool.
Snake out of pool. Because I mean, there was a me back in the day that would have seen a snake and gone, oh, well, I guess that snake owns my pool now. But I've changed. I've adapted, right? It's a new world. I've become more adaptable. And so I've realized that not only is the snake needing to get out of the pool, but the snake is also injured. Now, I'm not a person who can deal with snake injuries. That's beyond my capability.
Well, that was my next question. Like, first of all, how do you tell a snake's injured? It's one long body part. It's not like you can be like, oh, the arm on this snake is broken. It's just one. You got to be able to... But you're saying there's like a gash taken out of it. So you're seeing
There was a couple of gashes. So there was a smaller gash and then like a proper big sort of, you know, size of your palm. style gash. So a decent size. Like, you're like, this is not something that a snake can just shake off. It wasn't moving very quickly. It had clearly got in this thing that it could not get out of. You know, it was trying to seek some sort of shelter from being attacked, I imagine. I don't know. I don't actually know these things. I'm speculating on these things. But there's an organization called Wires, and what they do is they will come and rescue, you know, injured native animals. So that's their job. So if you, like, you know, if a koala falls out of a tree, or if, you know, you find a baby possum, or, you know, there's an injured snake in your pool, you call up the people at Wires and they will come over and they will collect it and nurse it back to health.
Okay. So I in my head, I'm glad you elaborated on that, because in my head you had some just in your back pocket Australian snake knowledge that you were able to just, like, I just imagine every Australian is that nature guy. What was his name? Steve Irwin.
Who just has. Like, get the snake kit, love. It's all right. I need to stitch up.
It's another one. Get my snake stuff. You know, the long cast and just... Get extra wrap. This is a big one. This is a baby python, but we're still looking at about 20 feet. Get a lot of gauze. We need a lot of gauze. Wrap it.
I like the idea that the expert from Wires might arrive and I've just, like, put 300 band-aids around a snake and gone, did my best, mate.
Well, that brings me back to the first thing I said, is, like, an injury is usually on any other creature besides a snake would be on, like, a part. It's just one. So you basically, in my mind, to fix a snake, you just do one long splint, like a snake splint. That's just like you cut off sticks that are the length of that snake. And then it's like a snake cast where now the snake is just a straight snake for like 2 to 3 weeks until it mends. And that's how you fix a snake. It's just one bone, right? A snake is just like a spine that runs along the length of a creature. So you can't.
Yeah, but your impression seems to be that, like, snakes ordinarily are straight. Whereas if you've ever seen a snake, they move from side to side and their whole body moves and curls with them. So the idea that you would somehow put them in a plaster and then forevermore this snake would only be able to go in one direction and not...
But what I'm saying is, when you have an injury, like say I break my arm, right, the way a human or any other animal breaks your arm is you keep it in one position and you don't move. So I'm not an idiot, Will. I know that snakes are wiggling to and fro.
I'm not sure that we can rule out that you're an idiot yet based on the conversation we're having. But no, because even the example you're using, you're showing me on this video call how the arm is not in a straight position. One part of it's straight, but the rest of it, you've got the elbow bent still. You haven't, like, put your entire arm from the shoulder down to your hand in one big straight motion to fix it, have you?
But I'm not doing this. Now I'm wiggling my arm. So you're saying a snake. So say this is a snake. I'm holding my arm out. This is a snake. Okay, ignore that I was bending my elbow. Snakes don't have elbows, Will. I'm not an idiot. Snakes don't have
snakes
elbows.
Aren't snakes a series of elbows? Isn't that kind of how... Like, don't they have, like, 20 elbows?
In closing of the Will Anderson Nature Show, a snake is a series of elbows. It's one long... The way I understand snakes is it's one long spine. Like, you know how your back... It's really a... It's a bat. It's like if you just put skin around your spine and then had nothing else, and then that's it. That's a snake. So it's
right, but the spine's obviously capable of, like, moving, like, and curling and doing these things that our spine is not as capable of doing. I suppose if you did, like, a lot of yoga, you could replicate a snake with your spine.
But if I injure my spine, I don't want to be in a sling. I wouldn't want the doctor to put me, like, in a cast that allows me to just, like, dance and move around. I'm gonna want to be, like, stiff and not be able to move. So that's why I imagine a snake, if it's a broken, any part of the long one bone of a snake, is you're now a stick. You just make two sticks and you put it along each side of the snake, and now the snake is a stick, and the snake doesn't move for 2 to 3 weeks or however long snakes take to heal, and it just has to sit there as a snake in one long snake, not doing snake stuff, and then like, I don't know. You gave the snake away to an organization, so who knows what they're doing right now?
Well, technically, at the moment, snake is still in our hands, I believe. So I delayed, so I had to get it out of the pool. So this was, you know, the first thing. Got the snake out of the pool. By the way, don't think it's a spinal injury. So probably a hypothetical conversation at the best of times. Seemed more like an injury to the stuff around the spine, like a big, you know, sort of gash, like it's been attacked by another animal. So it's more like a skin and flesh injury than it is a spinal injury, I would have thought. So maybe putting the entire snake in a cast from head to toe might be an overreaction.
I'm still imagining you have to wrap this. I still don't want this snake to move. Can I call? Can you put these snake
the guy on when the guy arrives?
Can you add to the Zoom call the snake guys? I have a couple, not questions, more suggestions.
I believe the snake is still just outside the door of my office here, so I might hear when the snake guy comes. And if I do hear when the snake guy comes, I might take just a couple of minutes to go out and see what his prognosis of the snake's injuries are and what he recommends the treatment of the snake's injuries.
Please make sure I'm a part of that conversation.
So what I have done is, imagine if you're just a guy from Wires Country, Australia, go out to collect a snake from somebody's house and then suddenly you're on a podcast.
Yeah.
A guy in America who's got some questions for you. If you could just...
No, that's really what I want to happen. No, yeah, you're just in the middle of nowhere, Australia, and then this like podcast about. So, but you just left the snake. You went and did your podcast. Now that an injured, in bad shape snake.
I can hear outside now. There's some stuff going on. So, pause.
Oh wait,
for a second.
I just heard the guy say, "Hey, put him in a long splint and don't let him move." For 2 to 3 weeks. This is a spinal injured snake.
You pause here for 1 second. I'm literally going to try to find out what is going on.
Okay, go ahead.
No cast.
Did you tell him, did you ask him all my questions? Snake update. Did you ask him all my questions?
I asked a lot of questions. So firstly, pre-existing injury. Old injury, it feels like, is what's going on here. Possibly, like, because apparently these sort of snakes attack live animals. That's their go. They, like, feed on live animals. And so this snake's obviously got in a fight with, like, some wild animal that it was trying to eat, probably like a possum or something like that. And the possum's taken a big bite out of it. You do not put a cast on it. 100% ruled out the cast option.
You did ask them, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I feel like, I like the information that they give you that is just like snake 101. They're like, hey, let me tell you something about snakes. Snakes get into a lot of scraps with other animals. Snakes, I don't know if you know anything about snakes, but they try to eat other animals and they eat them whole. And so, like, that's my first question. You're trying to eat a possum whole, and it seems like this snake got in a tango with the wrong possum.
With the wrong possum.
And this is an old snake and injury. That's what, and the snake doctors came in like, no, this isn't fresh. This is an old snake's getting into a lot of scraps. This is an old snake and injury. And now
it's you're pretty much describing how the conversation went down. It was very much like, oh yeah, these sort of snakes, they get into a lot of trouble.
I feel like that's the one. That's the only prognosis if you're a snake doctor and somebody like you is like, you got to come out here and look at my snake. It's an injured snake. I don't even feel like that doctor needs to look at the snake. They could just be like, yeah, is there a chunk taken out of the snake? Yeah. Let me tell you about snakes. They get into a lot of fights with other animals, and the other animals don't want to be eaten by said snake.
Alive by the snake.
I don't know if you've ever seen a snake just swallow a possum whole, but that possum isn't interested in that happening.
So, not into it at all.
So anytime you see a snake injury, that's what happened. It's another animal saying, not today, snake.
I mean, that's a fair point. If, like, for example, you told me that you were on some new diet where you only ate living animals, like they had to be living for you to enjoy eating them, and you kept messaging me going, hey, I've got a bit of an injury, I'd be like, it's the live animal eating again, isn't it?
Did an animal stop you from eating it? Yeah, that is what happened.
Yeah, again.
And I feel like when a snake hangs out with other snakes, it's just every snake is just decimated from trying to eat these other animals. And they have to be like, oh, what was that one? Ah, 2 weeks ago, possum, what was that one? A hawk just ripped me up into the sky, dropped me back down on the ground. This is a talon injury down by the lower half of my one body. So snakes aren't like, I have an arm injury. They have to just point it out by like one long body part. They're like, hey.
How do they point it out?
Well, okay. Now, this whole podcast is going to be about snakes, by the way.
Also, what I love is this entire podcast is going to be misinformation about snakes. Like, please. We will dedicate the entire podcast to snakes, and we will be entirely speculating
for
the entire thing about snakes.
Don't put, like, the keywords for Google anything like snake information or snake podcast, because I feel like a whole community could go down a wrong rabbit hole if they're looking for genuine snake information. But now, so they had to come out, they had to drive to your house, and how many snake injuries did they mention at all, like... Was this like their 15th snake today, or are they like, hey man, don't call us out. Don't call us out to your property. Every time a snake fucked with the wrong possum, that's just snake business 101. You got yourself a broken snake. You can't, this is no longer a snake. This snake is, snaking days are over. Or saving the snake.
Yeah, they're compassionate about this. Like, I mean, because there would be some people, Andy Peters, who would have found that snake in their, you know, pool this morning, and they would have seen the snake that was injured, and they would have used perhaps the shovel that they used to get the snake out of the pool to, you know, send the snake on to a different world. You know, we did not do that. We were heroes, I want to say.
Champion
essential
of this.
Workers, essential yeah. working heroes on the front line.
Champion of the snake community. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the snake's now going to go to an animal hospital and get looked after.
Wow. And then afterwards.
They tell us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I'm going to follow it up. I mean, it could be really one of those doctor death situations where some, like, you know, doctors going around a nursing home knocking off old people. Like,
excuse me, doctor, why do you keep doing air quotes when you say snake hospital? Yeah, we're taking them to the snake hospital. I'm sorry, you keep putting air quotes around the word snake hospital. Yeah, no, we're going to take care of this snake. Yeah, again, you're putting air quotes around take care of this snake. No, we're going to mend this snake and get this snake back to good health. Sir, you're continuously doing air quotes through that entire sentence. No, don't worry about this snake.
Now you're just doing air quotes on that. Which
sir, you haven't stopped. Makes sense. Sir, you haven't stopped doing air quotes this entire snake conversation. No, we're going to take care of it. We're going to take care of your snake. We're going to take it. Now I got a picture in my head of what a snake hospital is like. And again, I'm going to go back to one long split situation where it's just a bunch of snakes in these little snake hospital beds, all unable to move, and their injuries are wrapped up, and they're all in these little splints, and they're trying to be like, what are you in for?
When you're imagining this, you're imagining it like actual human beds, though, aren't you?
No, like little. Oh yeah, I guess I am. Like a human hospital, but it's giant snakes, but in long beds, because again, you can't be curled up and do snake business. You're in a long split snake cast. So these are pretty long. These are like 30-foot long beds.
So what? Technically, then you'd need it kind of designed a bit more like a corridor, like a laneway would be perfect for a snake hospital. So you could lay them end to end rather than it being.
The hospital itself is like one long snake. It's just a huge, long hospital that is a corridor that you walk through and you just check on each individual. Just a head, just a snake head popping out of one long cast. All right, we don't have to talk about snakes anymore, but I'm glad that snake's going to be okay. And I don't want your listeners to think I'm some kind of demonic snake-killing monster.
It's like having a serial killer, like, living on your property somewhere. But here's the thing. As long as you don't bother the serial killer, the serial killer's not going to do any serial killing because the serial killer is just happy to go about its own business. In fact, the serial killer, it turns out, gets used to your regular routine. So, like, knows yeah. what you're up to, never comes out when you're about. Like, you know, he's very, very happy to just be a brown snake under the pile. The problem is, and this is the mistake that some people make, again, this is all from one source. I've done no further research than from what
well, now I'm questioning your understanding of serial killers. That's my takeaway, is that you have this imagination where, like, hey, if you don't go up to that serial killer and, like, poke him in the face, he won't serial kill you. That's not how a serial killer will just, they'll just come in and kill you.
I think you'll find serial killers are as afraid of you as you are of them.
As long as you don't pester that serial killer, you won't be on his list of...
Just make some noise. Maybe bang a shovel on the ground. Just make sure that the serial killer knows you're coming and they will not serial kill you. No, okay. Maybe a bad analogy. But okay, so it runs this turf, and as long as there's no turf wars... So basically yeah. what you don't want to do is you don't want to get rid of your brown snake, because your big old king brown snake... keeping the prop, this is like, you know, runs the area. So it is that kind of old school mob boss, right? Like, it is yeah. that sort of thing of just going, look, it's outside the law, but this is his rules, his property, and things tend to run pretty well if you just fucking leave him alone under that pile of wood and you don't chop his head off if you see him. Because apparently what happens is, if you lose your big King Brown, then all the local young punk browns are like, here's some turf that I can take over. And then suddenly you're overrun with all these, like, young, ambitious brown snakes who are looking to take the crown.
And you just leave your property, you open your door one day and it's just a bunch of, you know, cool, hip snakes wearing hats and smoking their jazz cigarettes, hanging out outside your front yard. You're like, oh, man, the brown snake retired. This sucks. Right. Yeah, but you just gentrified. Live in a house.
My wood pile has been gentrified.
Damn it. There's a record store / laundromat / sandwich shop / razor scooter sales place ran by snakes on my property. This is the worst. The brown snake would have never let this happen. There's there's snakes rapping on the corner. There's there's a snake skate shop. There's a snake. There's a new coffee shop that's ran entirely by young snakes on my property. But you just, so you have an understanding with this brown snake. You just sleep in a bed at night, yeah. all cozy like, with a ticking time bomb. But he's like a Tony Soprano of snakes. As long as you, like, pay your respects and you visit him, you know, I imagine he sits outside of the snake sandwich shop. He's hanging out with other brown snakes. And as long as you give him stuff that a snake likes, and I don't know what snakes like, but if you come and maybe, you know, give him a raccoon or just a live possum and just lay it in front of where the snakes hang out, you're fine. And then he keeps the riffraff snakes off your property.
I think that is what happens. Like, I think generally your understanding of it is actually what happens.
Whew. I'm glad we cleared that up. I'm a dad now, so this is a good segue into, like, this type of knowledge that my understanding of the world that I'm going to be passing along to my son is, I think about this kind of stuff a lot. When stuff comes up like, hey, Dad, how do snakes work? This is going to be the level of understanding. Like, how does anything in the animal kingdom work? Well, as long as you keep one brown snake happy, none of the snake riffraff will bother you. So okay, go about your...
So you mentioned that you dropped a pretty big bombshell, not to me because I was aware of it,
sorry.
But to maybe to the listening audience, that you are now a father. So, I mean,
yeah.
So tell us about that.
Well, we did it. Our son, Silas, is adopted, and we did it mid-pandemic, which I can't recommend enough. If you're going to... Adopt a baby. Make sure that the world
is already a pretty smooth process from my external understanding.
Yeah, right. It's already like, it was like, I mean, we've been in process for a long time. So it was like, not like, it's not like somebody called and they're like, you are adopting a baby. We didn't like win like a, the weirdest game show that's ever existed. Like we were in line.
Or you weren't one of those people who was just like, a lot of people got rescue dogs during the lockdown for company. Yeah. You guys weren't like, yeah, well, we want to go a step further than this. Is there any babies available?
You know what? This pandemic isn't difficult enough. I feel like I'm really swimming through this thing. The world is ending, and for some reason, it hasn't affected me at all. You know what? I would like to do paperwork to acquire one human, please. On top of worrying about dying every single day, I would like to like put another layer on this. So the true story is like we didn't know. So the pandemic, we had been in process, my wife and I, Kate, of adopting a baby for like 2 years, all said and done. But like it really gets serious when you sign official paperwork, and we did that like a year before the pandemic happened. And then the pandemic happened and we didn't have an understanding. We thought, we just had this sort of understanding that like adoption stopped. That was like, or like there was like a hold. Like we didn't think it was, there was any possibility it would happen in the middle of the world ending. And so we were just kind of like, okay, we'll get to this when it happens. And then so we get a call that, and we're both from Michigan. I don't know if your listeners know where Michigan is, in the middle of America. And so the baby was born. So typically in an adoption, you are there for like the whole process. You know the birth mother and you like are there in the months leading up to the birth. And then you're in the hospital and like none of that happened. So in our case, we get a call. And it was like, this baby is already born and is in Detroit, Michigan. And can you guys get on a plane tonight? Because like this baby's born and the birth mother, and we don't know the full story. So the birth mother, like, just like, I think like last minute you could possibly decide, put the baby up for adoption. And then how it works is like you, if you're trying to be an adopting parent, you basically make this binder of pictures that sells you as like the perfect couple to adopt a baby to. So it's the weirdest thing. So we did this thing like a year ago where it's a lot of, it's like, it's almost like headshots for like a comedian or like a promo package that you would put together of like all the stuff you're good at, but it's parenting. So it's like you do these, and a lot of like, we just used like real photos. Like it was us like hanging out with our dog and like pictures of us doing our jobs. But they sent us, the adoption agency when we first signed up, sent us like samples of other adopting parents, like portfolios. And some of them are like, I enjoy cooking. And it's a guy holding a frying pan with like nothing inside of it. Like, it's like, or it's like, I got one hiking stick. Or like, I'm really outdoorsy. A brand new Patagonia jacket with the tag hanging out of the back. Like, it's like, we decided right out the gate, like, we're just going to, like, show people. We're pretty interesting. Like, my wife's interesting. I'm a comedian, which I don't know if that's interesting. But that, like, we didn't have to do much. We took, like, 3 photos and then wrote about ourselves. But, like, we didn't get picked for, like, 2 years. So, basically, you just send off these profiles. And we kept, our adoption agency for like 2 years was like, kept asking for more. And it's like the comedian in me is like, what am I doing wrong? Like, how do I tighten up my 5 minutes here? Exactly. How do I?
Like, I'm getting a lot of pitches out there, but I'm just not getting a lot of yeses.
Not getting any bites. Should I take out the photo where I'm juggling? Because I don't actually know how to juggle. But those clubs are on strings. Should I take that? I could. That's a quick edit. I could edit out the photo of pretend juggling if they're not. I mean, but like it was stuff
if,
like
if it was that. Imagine if they were just there going, I mean, you can't bring a baby to an environment where a guy is throwing giant clubs around the house willy-nilly. This is like, I don't know why he's included this.
What if that's all you have? Like, that's you're some sort of, like, high-risk danger stunt man. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, I'd really like to adopt a baby. But every one of my photos is me in a flaming car or hang gliding off a cliff. And I don't know if this is baby stuff. But you guys don't mind if all my photos, like, you're one of those people, your job is setting yourself on fire. And it's like, tell me a little bit about your occupation. Well, I sent in those photos. Did you see those photos? Like, yeah. We can't put a literal baby into the arms of a flaming man. Well, that's my stage name, Andy Flaming Man.
I do very well. I'm a professional performer.
I don't know what you want me to do about the fact...
Shouldn't be discriminated against the adopted baby just because my job is lighting myself on fire.
You're not going to give a baby to a flaming man whose wife is a knife juggler. Is that what you're telling me right now?
Discrimination. Because that's what I'm hearing.
So, and a part of me, so throughout the whole process, a part of my brain, my comedy brain is like, oh, it's because I'm a comedian, or like the other people are like, oh, that's not a job. because we thought it was like fun and like, you know, my wife has a real job and I'm just this dumb idiot. But I thought like people would find that endearing and fun. But like a year and a half goes by, nothing, no hits. And then the pandemic happened, and then out of the blue, so this is September. And this wasn't like a typical situation where I think what happened was like the baby was already born and the birth mother was like, well, I got to pick somebody. And they just like handed her a stack of these profiles. And I really like the way they said it in the call. They were like, you were chosen. It's finally happened. And then they explained the situation. And we're like, I'm sorry. But so by chosen, do you mean that like we were on the available immediately stack? Like we got our outtakes. Like these are the good ones. Don't look at this pile. Like this guy is like, this guy's an accountant and she's like, you know, doing really well. Don't look at that pile. This is Andy and his wife. No one's biting. Will you just throw them a bone and maybe like... Like, we got to call them today and tell them to re-up the profiles. Or you could just pick them and we could get this started for you today if this is our discount.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're like the floor model. You're like, yes, yeah. We could order you the thing. It's going to take 6 weeks. You're going to have to put it together yourself. Or if you like, this one, look, this one's been on the floor for a while. There's a couple of dents in it or whatever, but once you get it home, it'll be fine. And I'll do your deal. I'll do your deal if you take it today.
You can hold out for a hedge fund manager or a district regional accountant of some kind. Or you can get this comedian who's currently not working, just stays at home. He's very available. We talked to him today. He's already on an airplane. So you really...
He had nothing to cancel.
He's got nothing
to drop.
It was like,
do you want a few hours? He's like, no, no, no.
I'm there now. I'm at LAX. Like, that was how it was presented to us, like, this situation that was, they were kind of like, well, obviously you can't do this. Like, it's like, you could say no. And we're like, no, that's fine. that's totally doable. And so the reason we were able to do it is because we're both from Michigan. And so it just happenstance this baby was born outside of Detroit, so we were able to like get on a plane. Like, we knew Michigan really well, flying in Detroit. I'm from the Detroit area and my wife is from Mid Michigan, and we both have like family there, so it was like this like weird I feel like the adoption agency like had this phone call double take when we're like, yeah, we'll take, yeah, that's it. This is the one, we'll do that. There was a moment where they're like, what? How? What? Because it was like, this was a very not typical adoption. It wasn't like, so we get there and now we had to decide too. So we flew there. And so keep in mind, this was a pandemic. So, like, the world has, we hadn't, like, left our house up to this point. So, this is in September. So, this happens in September. So, from March till September was just, like, pandemic time. We hadn't left our house. We started doing everything, like, getting our groceries picked up and just doing the whole apocalypse thing where we weren't making contact with anybody. And then suddenly we're just like, all right, we'll get an airplane packed with people. And we didn't even know if you could do that at that point. Like, we knew you could, but it's like, what are airports like? What is flying like? And we didn't, we decided, I think before we even flew out, we decided to not fly back. So we flew there. And then we didn't even have, like, the stuff. Like, we didn't know. Like, we had, we were pretty prepared at the house. Like, we had a lot of baby stuff. Like, you see on the video, we have baby stuff here. Like, we were ready to, like, receive a baby in a very, like, slow, meticulous way. But this was, like, how do you go, like, what do you need to bring to your last-minute emergency baby pickup? And so we had... We're, like, driving to the airport and, like, calling all of our family in Michigan and being like, all right, get, like, newborn clothes, get, like, a car seat, and, like, get all the, like, go-to pick-up-a-baby stuff. And so, usually have, like, 9 months to prepare. So, we were, like, mentally prepared, but not, like, physical stuff prepared, if that makes sense.
I mean, it is one of, yeah, it's rare that you have a surprise baby. Like, that you, I mean... You knew you were in this process, but the actual, you know, the fact that it came as such a surprise, it would be rare even in adoption, let alone obviously in the real world where you do have, like you said, 9 months to prepare for this. Like,
yeah,
it's a highly unusual circumstance.
And that, and it makes me think of like what, how I still can't wrap my head around like a person being like, oops, I'm pregnant. Like, I don't. Or not knowing till like month, like a later in the month. I guess it's possible it happened. And so, or like the decision was made and then it was like a last minute thing. So the full story, I'll fast forward. So we adopt the baby and that all went like surprisingly smooth. Like the whole time we were really worried that something like in these processes, they could like, since it was so last minute and everything was like thrown together, like we got to Michigan and met like our lawyer, like we met everybody like last second. We get off a plane, drive right from the plane to like meet the baby, meet her lawyer. And it was like this really awkward, like the birth mother's there, the whole thing, like, and it is just the, like this just weird, like quiet, no one's like saying anything to anybody. And the baby was already there, like brought from the hospital to this like adoption agency. And it is just like, I don't even remember like what you say in that situation. It is just like stuff where you're just like, so Michigan, huh? So we're from Michigan and you're from Michigan. And how do you like, so that's the baby there, huh? That's our baby. That's my new, there he is. And you're just kind of like nodding towards it. And the other side of things are the people that do this like every day. Like we didn't have the months to prepare. So you're just dealing with like people just doing paperwork and they're like, all right, I got to go print this off. Let me leave the room for a second. And then my wife and I are just with the birth mother and the baby. I was like, I don't know. What do we do? Shake hands? What do we do?
Right.
What do we do?
What, incredibly, like nobody talks you through what the etiquette in that situation is. And
yeah,
like is there like an official handover?
There is, like it's a literal handover. So the baby's sitting there in a car seat and it like there's never like no one says like ceremoniously like this is the time of the baby taking. It's just it's kind of like all right, okay, everything's signed, everything looks good. And then, like, you know, you hug the birth mother. Usually, like, this is very not typical. Like, you would have a relationship with this person. So this was kind of like we met and within a half an hour meeting a person, we're like, and baby, please.
Yeah, so, we'll be taking that baby now.
So what? Yeah, we'll be taking. I shouldn't have said that. That was probably a misstep. Is when I got impatient. Was like, so anyway, we're gonna do this baby handoff, or we're gonna get this baby, or
waiting for the first birthday. Is that what's going on?
I shouldn't have kept. I shouldn't have kept doing the wrap it up hands. Like
clicking your fingers.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you stop pointing at your watch? That's really rude. Can we? I haven't had coffee yet. Can we get this?
Guys, it's a pandemic. I got to get back to staying inside and doing nothing for months on end. Right.
Well, and that was like the other thing. It's like we just didn't think that it was even possible. Like every step along the way, like, okay, how do you do this in a pandemic? Like, how do you go into like a hospital in a pandemic? And like, you got to imagine like the other side of it too. Like, and it was all so like everyone's wearing masks. It was probably the least amount of like humanness that an adoption's ever had, because it is a lot of like they don't see you and there's like this disconnect. And then it was kind of like there's a moment where you meet the baby, and then we took him, and then it was like we were just sitting in this rental car. Us and like, and there is this moment of like, oh, we're like, we're parents right now. Like, starting now, we're parents.
Well, because in a way, it's been a theoretical idea for you. So, okay, so talk about as much or as little as this as you're comfortable with, obviously. But was it like, had you guys always wanted to adopt, or you tried to have a baby in a different way and couldn't do that and decided that adoption was the way to go? Like, how long had you been thinking about a baby, I guess, is the question behind it.
It was from the very beginning. So we've been married over 10 years now, but my wife and I, Kate, we've known each other for over 15 years since college. So since we've been like 19. And I remember like very early on, it was never like a question of how to do it. It was always adoption. It was just kind of like a lot of conversations about how it's just like ethically better. Or there was just kind of a lot of joking conversations about like, not like adding to the babies, or like there's already available babies, so we could just like raise one of those, because the world doesn't need like additional. There's already a lot of babies, and a good amount of them aren't being taken care of. So like it was nothing like that forced it upon us. It was always kind of like how we were going to do it.
Okay, so yeah, so you go into this process, you know, with your eyes wide open of like, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is how we want to do it. This isn't like a last chance sort of scenario. This is just our plan and what we want to do. And I totally dig that and respect that, by the way, because I think it must be the biggest question that anybody who's having children has at the moment, which is how do you bring children into a world which is already, you know, hugely populated, resources aren't divided equally, has so many oncoming troubles with, like, you know, the climate, and you're in the middle of a pandemic and all these sort of things. You know, the fact that there is this child here that needs to be looked after, and you can have an opportunity to look after this child, it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. But it's also just happened, and you're suddenly parents. Like, there is also just a bit of it that it's gone from being very theoretical to very real very quickly.
Well, and we learned very quickly in the process. So we had been, for a long time, had been sort of loosely in and out of the process, and then it became official about 2 years ago. And then, but before that, always planning, and you do, like, you paint these like scenarios in your head, well, how it'll go perfectly. And then we went to a lot. I remember very early on when we decided we were going to do it, you go to like these seminars, and how the seminars work is they basically like you meet a person that was adopted, and then you meet like the head of the adoption agency, and then you meet this like family that had just adopted, and every story is like this like perfect, pristine, no craziness way of adopting. And then like everything you read is just like, here's what happens. You meet the birth mother, and you have this beautiful relationship for this time, and you bring this life into the world, and then, like, she very happily sends it off. Cut to fast forward us in Michigan being like, is this how this works? Like, this is this actually... I was, like, waiting the whole time for somebody to be like, prank show! This isn't a...
You've been pandemic pranked.
Yeah.
Our new show where we've really ramped up the emotional trauma involved in our...
MTV, so you think you're adopting. Oh, this is the worst. MTV, we got to talk about your latest program. MTV 2, psych, you're not a dad. God damn it. Am I on Psych, You're Not a Dad? God damn it. You guys know this is like emotionally draining. You're terrible people.
It's a compelling television. Don't get me wrong. I've watched a couple episodes myself, but this is cool when you're in the middle of it.
I am SAG, so you are going to have to pay a premium. But I will happily sign the release form to be on Psych, You're Not a Dad. But this is, I flew here. I got to figure out how to get back to California from Michigan in a pandemic. That was the other part. We were in Michigan, and luckily we had, like, family around us, and we stayed with Kate's sisters, my sister-in-law, and their family. Like, and by the way, sidebar, I just realized while you were having your snake situation, while we were in Michigan after we adopted the baby, we had a hawk situation, very similar situation. Mm-hmm. Injured hawk on my sister-in-law's property was like a hawk flapping around, and it was the same sort of thing. These, like, hawk ladies came out who were hawk experts and just, like, put the injured hawk into a car, and we're like, okay, good luck with that hawk. And it was the same sort of thing. Yeah. But
we're taking them to the Hawk Hospital, man.
I'm sorry.
You're doing the air
quotes, sorry, man. You keep saying quote unquote Hawk Hospital. They say it. We're gonna go to the quote unquote Hawk Hospital. I'm sorry. Is it a Hawk Hospital?
Because you said quote unquote at the start of it. No. We'll get him straight to quote unquote Hawk Emergency. Again, are you actually talking about Hawk Emergency?
Again, you're doing air quotes and you're saying quote unquote Hawk Hospital. I like the idea of a specific kind of bird hospital. Like, it's not just a bird sanctuary. It's like, oh, man, should we take this guy to the canary farm or to the eagle sanctuary? No, it's a hawk. Like, right down the street from the eagle sanctuary is a hawk hospital. Okay, we'll go there.
Turn left at the eagle sanctuary. You'll be right at the quote-unquote hawk hospital. Again, you've said quote-unquote, and that's the thing that's making me feel...
I'm going to stop you every time you say quote unquote, because they do feel like there isn't a hawk hospital in this scenario where, no, it's fine. We're going to take him to the quote unquote hawk hospital. Again, you did it again.
The thing with the hands, and you said it.
The thing with the hand.
Okay, so you have a baby now. Suddenly you're in.
So now we're in you're Michigan.
You're in Michigan. You have a baby.
Which is our home state. So it was great. So we, like, felt very comfortable with that scenario. And, like, met up with our family, and they, like, had all the stuff. They had a baby bed and all the diapers you can imagine, and, like, all the things you need for the first days, and everybody just, like, rallied around. So that was great, but it's still, there was still moments of, like, all right, how do you do any of this? It was and you have to stay. So the way adoptions work too is every state has their own laws regarding when the state, like, lets you leave with that baby. So we had to not only stay in the state of Michigan for a couple of days, we had to stay in the county, Wayne County, where Detroit is. We had to stay in that county for like 2 days, I think. So we were like in a hotel and figuring
seems
out.
I mean, there may be some reason for it, but it seems like an arbitrary amount of time. Like, it doesn't feel like 2 days doesn't seem like enough. If there's some rule that you can't leave the state with a baby a week, like, you know, some sort of cooling off period, I might understand. But 2 days doesn't seem enough. That seems like an initiative they've come up with the local tourism and hospitality industry. Where, like, I reckon we can get a couple of nights at a hotel out of these motherfuckers before they flee our state.
Yeah, and we're also putting that in air quotes. You have to be in here for 2 weeks. I'm sorry, is it?
Again.
again. Is it 4 weeks? How many? Just tell me how many weeks. But yeah, and it also, but the reason for the 2 days is because it really is a time where the other person could just change their mind, where you could, like, psych, you're not a parent, could actually happen. And but that seems like, doesn't that seem like a short window to make that decision? To be like, okay, I just gave these people my baby, but, you know, it's been 48 hours, and I'm gonna need that baby back. It seems like a quick... So anyway, so, like, we get through all of that, and then... And then, like, we didn't realize really, like the sleep schedule. Once you have a baby, like, it's all baby all the time. Like, especially in those first, like, there's no, even now, like, today, like, it's been 5 months now. He's 5 months old. And it's still, like, every day since then, it's just 100% baby. Like, we have these schedules taped everywhere where it's just, like, and all it is, and it's really, like, human activities in its simplest form. They're, like, the... schedule will literally read like sleep, eat, play, sleep, eat, play. But that's like your whole day. And you're like, okay, between one of these sleeps, I can like do a podcast or like write a script. It's like, no, it's you realize like quickly you're just staring at a baby monitor and like every little thing, every little movement is like, oh, he's waking up. Oh, he's waking up. Oh, he's hungry. And it's like, that's all day, every day for... So the 5 months since it happened, that's been, so in those first days, it didn't really hit us, like it hit us hard that like, you just don't sleep. That's like the big thing. I think people kind of told us that, but I feel like when you talk to other parents and you're going into parenting or preparing to be a parent, that's always presented as this like jokey, like, oh, I hope you don't like sleep. And it's just kind of like, ah, okay. I don't know what that means. And then, like, you actually don't. Like,
it's one of those things where you go, you probably shouldn't have said it like it was a joke. Because I thought maybe you were joking. Like, if you'd actually just sat me down and gone, no, literally, dude, you're never going to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, I've slept 9 hours in the last 4 months. That is, like, stop laughing. This is not a joke, man. I'm not, like, doing a funny bit.
You don't.
I literally, like, I'm not in control of my own thoughts anymore. It's like, I'm in Guantanamo Bay, my friend.
It is always, but it is like, so you don't know what it means. So when someone's like, oh, you're never sleeping again, it's like, so what does that mean? 6 hours of sleep then? Like, yeah, it's like, right. No. Break it. So give me the amount of hours. Is it still eight? Yeah. Is it eight? Is it
like eight?
It's like, no.
Eight and a nap is what you're saying, right? Because I think so still survive on eight and a nap.
Yeah. Eight and a nap. Eight and a... No, that I'm laughing now because that's just so ridiculous. But my wife and I have developed a pretty good like tag in and out system because I stay up late already. So I do like the early shift and then we like kind of do a baby handoff in the middle of the evening where we got a good thing going now. But those first couple of days, it was just like we were both like, and you don't quite know what's happening. Like, and you don't know the moves. You don't know what to do. Because the baby just tells you, like, I'm not going back to sleep. Like, I'm scream crying for the next 7.5 hours. And you just try to, like, and everybody's, like, a parenting expert. So everybody's like, oh, you got to bounce the baby or you got to, like, sway the baby. And the baby's just like, nah, that's not going to do it. Nah. That's not, you can bounce me all you want. Like, I'm scream crying for the next, I just don't want to sleep. And I'm going to tell you by a high-pitch howling of a scream. For, well, let's do 5 hours. You want to do 5 hours a night? Let's do a five.
There's no solution to this. You're not doing anything wrong. This is just what I do.
And so we had that like feel out process in Michigan. And again, like very abrupt, no, like we knew we wrapped our heads around what it would be, but it was still like, as it's happening, we're like, okay. And then we eventually had to get back to California. So that was the other part. Like we had this new baby and we decided not to fly. And this was September. And I don't know if you looked at a map of America in the month of September of the year 2020, but all of it was literally on fire. Mm. Like that was the big news of like, And I know that, you know, like it was happening all over the world, but it was like we were trying to route how to get through literal, like driving through, like you would see, you know how when you look at like a map when there's like fires, and you guys went through this, Australia went through this, when you look at like how shitty that situation is where you're like, oh, let's check into where the fires are, and you look at a map and it's just a bunch of pictures of cartoon fire where they show you where fires are in a country, and it's like, oh, this is all fire. This is don't go to any place. So we had it bad, and I thought it was like spread out. I didn't really know the news. And like, we lived in California for a while, so there's fires in California like all the time. And they're always like, I'm from the middle of this, of the country, mid-Michigan, and like no fires. We're literally, that state is literally surrounded by water. I think it would be impossible to have like a forest fire in that state. And so my family's always like, they'll see the news where it's just pictures of fire, and it's always like surround, it's never like in LA, but in my parents' mind it's always like, oh, there's a fire on Pico and La Cienega. There's a forest fire at the Ralphs on La Brea.
Decimated the grove, apparently. So
The AMC 15 in Santa Monica is just, every tree in that forest is ablaze. But that's like in their mind. But like, this was like the first time where I saw it, where it was like, not even California. So we went, adopted the baby, and then the news was kind of like, oh, forest fires are really out of control. But I didn't really know where they were. And we started like planning. So we weren't going to fly. So the big grand plan was packing up in a rental car and driving from Michigan to California.
Which, and so that ordinarily would take how long?
Like 3 days.
Okay.
Which did still take us 3 days. But like if you look at a map, so it's like there's several routes that you can go. So you drive like south through the state of Indiana, and then you can head through the heartland, which is like Kansas, and then you go all the way through like Montana, Wyoming, and you just head through the middle of the country. Or if that whole part of the country is on fire, you have to go, and which we learned. We're like, all right, let's see it. Let's just Google map this really quick. And you look, and it is just like, oh, okay, we'll be driving through fire in Colorado, we'll be driving through fire. And it was like, oh, so we actually had to go south, which was still like, we had to go like southern route through Indiana, down into cutting into like Oklahoma and the panhandle of Texas. And so we did a southern route of the southern states of California. And I don't know if you've ever been to the south of America, but if you are as white as me and my wife, and you're driving through the south. By the way, I haven't mentioned this yet. African American, our baby, our son is African American, Silas. And if you do that in the south of America, they for sure think you kidnapped that baby.
Absolutely, 100%. Those guys have kidnapped a baby.
So it's a lot of like, and we're just like happy, like beep, 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 beep. And like each hotel we check into, there's taking, a lot of just
taking
like
a really circuitous route back to where you allegedly are going. You know, like it's like, this is not the right direction. No, it's the fires.
So it's happening like, you know, the world's ending, the pandemic's happened, the country's on fire. There's also all the like political stuff going on in the country, divided red states, blue states. This was right pre-election, so like coming right up into November, tensions happening, the protests in America just happened, all that's happening, like just winding up on like countries more divided than it's ever been. And we're just like, we just got, look at these progressive white folk with their new black baby, and we're just going to drive through Texas and nothing weird's going to happen.
What's more dangerous? We should have gone through the fires. This is actually a much more dangerous option.
All right, honey, we got to drive back home. Do you want, we got two routes we can take, fires or racism? Yep. Which one do you want to? burning sensation in your body or burning sensation in your brain? Which do you want? And so we did that, and it actually like was surprisingly fun, but there's a lot of like just looks. There's a lot of just like, you just check in with the baby. By like day three, we're like, I'll hang out in the car and we'll just like bring this like incognito baby into the hotel in the middle of Kentucky. So we get through that, and then yeah, now we're here and now we're parents, and it is like we're on month five. We're doing good. But it is like you drive into California, and then it is another. So it was like a lot of levels of like, okay, we're in Michigan. New parents don't know what we're doing. We're driving through the country. New parents don't know what we're doing. Now we're in California still. And then so all along the way, my wife Kate's mother was with us. She was amazing. She was like in the car with us and gave us all the tidbits, was helping us with like all the little like diaper change like information and just stuff like that, of just like the stuff that they didn't write books about, of just like how to like the motion to wipe a butt. You don't want to go, by the way, Will, you don't want to go up into the penis like that. You don't want a poopy penis. You want to go down away from the penis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just yep. So you know.
Thank you. It's good to know. Just
I was general. Messing that up. I was going, I was going like, I was putting more poop in places. I was putting the poop back into the butt, which is not what you want to do. You don't want to like bring more poop to where the poop just came from. You want the poop away from where the poop just came from.
It's come out of there. It should, obviously needs to go back in there.
I should write a book, because nobody like there isn't like a wiping butt book. There's a book for like everything else.
Okay, so what's it like? Is there an actual joy in a sort of pandemic existence with a baby? Because it needs that sort of attention anyway. Like you said, those first few months, regardless of what sort of parents you are, normally people are like, I'm not sleeping very much. We're basically just at home all the time. We're concentrating on the baby. Is there part of, you know, being in the middle of what you're in the middle of that's actually helpful to the idea that you're just like, we can hang out with this baby?
It kind of is. And that has been the weirdest thing, is like you stay at home, and I feel like just regular non-pandemic parenting is staying at home. But like the pandemic has taken this like pressure. It's weird to say, but like pressure of doing other stuff out of it. So it is like you can be like 100% baby. And it is. So I'm doing like the stay at home dad stuff. And then, but it is like, I often have this thought of like the baby, this is like the first baby. So like Silas would be of the first generation that was like born into the pandemic. So it's like the first, like a new existence that like is like ushering in. I'm sure there's been like sci-fi movies about this, like the Children of a New Beginning, or like Brave New World, or like the kind of, it's not what Brave New World's about at all. No. But like kind of
not the book Brave New World. Sorry.
Quote, a literal unquote, Brave New World.
Brave New World.
But it is like this kind of like, we realize that a lot of like as this thing goes on, there's like no, like everything's different now. So like if once the baby starts walking and once the baby starts talking, I don't know if you even need to like bring up the other things. Like, you know, your mom and dad used to go to a place called the grocery store and have a thing called jobs. And like, and would get on a thing called an airplane, and you could see everybody's face. It was crazy. And you did a thing called a handshake where you made eye contact and you touched skin on skin. And that's how we used to say hello to each other in the old world. I feel like you don't either. You bring that up as history, or it's just going to be, or we're going to go back to it and it's going to be fine. Like, I don't know. I'm in this weird.
My experience of living in a country that is mostly on top of COVID, not like entirely, there's outbreaks every now and again, but like in a general sense is mostly on top of COVID. people go back to handshakes and hugs and kisses and all those things remarkably quickly. It's
okay.
I was surprised at how quickly all those things have completely gone back to normal. Like I was in a state that, like the other day, like 2 days ago, I was in Queensland. In Queensland, they've barely had a case of COVID for the entire time. And so people up there really just haven't even lived in a COVID existence. And so we've run into some people we have not seen in 15 years, like, you know, at this restaurant we were at, and they are all like hugs and kisses. And I'm just like, oh, right. Wow. Like, I mean, I've been like hugging and handshaking like people inside my bubble, but I didn't realize this was just a, I haven't seen you in 15 years. I have no idea what you've been up to, but I guess we're kissing again now. We learned nothing.
Ah, that's so weird to me. See, I think about that a lot because, well, I guess, yeah, I'm very jealous of that because we live in the epicenter of America, at least. And so, like, I feel like all the rest of the country is going to, like, dissolve back into normalcy. And then we're going to be in this, like, you know, like in Waterworld or, like, a movie like that where it's, like, the civilization that time forgot, that where everything's, like, different. Everybody's like, wow, it's really still like that here? Like, yeah, don't look at me. Don't touch me and don't look at me. It's California. And we're going to be still in this bubble of, like... Yeah, and like, yeah, and my son's going to be like 18 and be like, yeah, my father has never touched me without putting me in the touch suit. I was born in the new times.
I mean, it's weird that you're not touching him. I think you're allowed to touch him.
Well, I said I put him in a and I just, well, that's another weird thing, like with a kid. And so I don't understand. There's a lot of that where people like keep a distance from the baby. And if I understand the science to be that babies can't get COVID, but there's still this like thing of like, we also like being stay at home parents in pandemic, there's nothing like nurseries or other people coming in to like help at all. So you're not getting this like outside assistance. And it's still weird. Like you'll get this information where it's like, okay, when it's time, when it comes time to, I was just hearing this the other day, when it comes time to bring your baby to a nursery, make sure that like the person taking care of your baby keeps a safe distance and everybody's like not around this child at all. It's like, that's, I don't want to, can we take care of this before any of that happens? Because A, I don't think that's how it works. And like, I don't want to live in this world where like, don't touch my baby. Don't, because I'm to the point now where I'm like, I would love a day like right now. I actually have to let go in a minute because there's like baby things happening.
Totally. I've got to check on the snake too. We've both got stuff going on. Let's not.
You gotta call the snake people. I have to raise a child. I should call the hawk lady, see how the hawk's doing now that you brought that up. I don't even know that thing's still alive. Yeah, call the quote unquote snake hospital. Yeah, but like I would love like a situation just for one day where you're like, hey, stranger.
Yeah. please take my baby.
I'll pay you. Please. I'll pay you to watch my baby.
Please, if you but it, just like, watch it. Touch it if you need to touch it. I'm willing to take the risk at this point.
So that's like, so long story short, my comedy's like totally on hold, but it's like stuff like where pandemic has almost been this like convenience where it's still like, if we were in a time where I'd be going to do like live tours and whatnot, that would be, I don't know how I would do that as like a parent. So this has kind of been like a nice, it's like parenting with training wheels where I'm like, okay, I can still like go into the other room and do this. I could still like go do one of these pretend comedy shows. That's what I call Zoom shows. Like, oh, we're pretending this is a comedy show. That's adorable. We're talking to Susan and Bob who are sitting in their living room. Welcome to the comedy show. This is the weirdest. Have you done any of those? I don't know. It seems like the Zoom shows, that's a thing.
But we're back doing shows now. So like there's actually shows happening in Australia now in pretty COVID safe ways. So we don't have to deal with it as much. But lots of people did them, but it was not for me. I didn't have that desperate need to perform that I needed to do.
I'm in that same camp. I'm in that same camp where I haven't gotten mentally to this place. Like it's almost been a year now since I've done it'll be a year in March since I've done a live show, and I still don't have this like Yeah, in California especially, there was this desperate town urge for all of, like, I feel like it was like the newer comedians, or like I had this like veteran spirit where I was kind of like, oh, thank God, I could just stop. I could just stop thinking about it for 1 month. That's
nice. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now shut it all down. Shut it all down.
We all need a break, and we really need time to like weed out who should not be doing this, by the way.
And get
like,
some we're good also ideas. Like, let's fill up the bucket with some good new ideas. Don't you feel like we've all just been rushing around running on empty?
Yeah, but then there was this time where, like, right away, like, people are like, you want to do my Zoom show? And I was like, it's been like 4 days since this pandemic has started. You guys have figured out, like, in California, there's this, like, Zoom comedy club that you can do. I'm putting it in air quotes. There's a Zoom comedy club that you can do where it is, like, you stand in a room. Like, you still go to a place, but the audience is a bunch of screens in this room, and they're all in their living rooms, and it's all, like, heads like this just watching you, and they're all well-lit. Nobody's laughing. It's like that. Like, if you would have told me in my first year of comedy that this is what comedy would become, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go to law school.
Fine. You know what? I think I'm going to actually learn how to juggle those clubs. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to remove the strings and I'm going to get this right. Hey, Andy, I am very conscious of the fact that you have some parenting to do, and we've run a little bit late today.
We're going to do this again because this is...
Now that we're back, we can do it
again. We're back. But this is my human... This is my comedy human contact. So we have to do this because this is what I was going to say. This is my only way of...
No, it's good, man.
Being comedic.
So nice to see you. And I wanted to hear that story today, obviously, because, you know, it's such a big thing in your life. And
man.
I wanted to hear all about it. So I'm very excited that you could do the show. Plug something, though. Tell people at least about something that they can, you must have like an album they can buy or some way they can, you know, help support you.
So if you go to, let's see, A Special Thing Records, you go to aspecialthing.com, my album's available there, or at Andy_Peters is all my upcoming stuff. But yeah, buy my album and feed my baby.
Mate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, you're the best. See you, buddy.